Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. We're doing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. 1989 was ground zero for the Ninja Turtles. That was their year.
And you could tell because the Transformers franchise collapsed.
Transformers never had that toy. You had to like strap your Ninja Turtle under a toilet that had slime flushed down the toilets. That actually happened. Look it up.
I remember a few years ago they were selling in stores like the original molds for the Ninja Turtle toys. And I was like, I gotta get all these. I'm gonna relive. And then and like at a certain point, I'm like, wait a second. I'm not gonna use this. Like, this is garbage. Like,
you mind if I kind of bring focus back to the game real quick?
If you have to.
Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
Some this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, a lane maintained with a course aimed at colleges. To HG101 we give the honor, thanks to Kirk Alotta, Xerxes to host it proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Booker Hart and others discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it, go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power. Hey, dog's power.
Hey, what are you suggesting?
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Top 47K Games. Episode 224 here, we're going to be talking about The House in Fata Morgana. I am Word on the Wind, and joining me, as semi-usual, is my good pal,
Slow Beef.
And I hear that you've got you brought some friends in on for this one.
I moonlight in another podcast, actually. So there's a bit of a crossover. I've also been in a podcast called Visual Novel Book Club, and we just wrapped up season 7, which is we discussed House in Fata Morgana. So I brought along a couple of folks.
You moonlight?
I do. That's one of the folks. Who are you?
I'm Turbo C.
Who's the other person?
Hi, Moin Runnin.
Hey.
Fantastic.
We're visual novel experts.
Here.
Yes.
Indeed.
So if you want to hear like 15 hours on this game, you know what to listen.
or you can just spend 50 hours playing it. I didn't realize this had so much text.
is this the plug portion? Let's just tell them all about our screw HG101.
Hold up. Let me get through the rest of the through the rest of this first. This was nominated to us by I think this is Ajo Gamer via Stitcher. Thank you very much for your 5-star review. This was developed by Novectical and was published by Manga Gamer on PC, with our earliest release date being December 31st, 2012 in Japan. Happy New Year.
So anyone know why this was released on December 31st?
Because it's New Year's Eve?
No, because that was one of the days of Winter Comic Market in Japan.
Oh.
And this is a dodging game that was released at Comic Market.
Wait, you said December 31st, right?
Yep.
Okay. Gotcha.
Hooray for Comic-Con.
But it was technically also New Year's Eve, right? So
it was.
I wasn't totally wrong.
Technically, yeah.
Technically, I was absolutely correct, is where.
This game also actually have, like, many publishers. It's one game in the United States, but then in Japan, it's Novak Tuckerman himself for the original release, and then it was released on iOS and on 3DS and the Vita. Each one is a different publisher. So that's a complex release schedule.
Yeah, so for our, you know, our Western perception, it's published by Manga Gamer, but it's a little more complicated than that. Yeah, this game is, as I said, this game has a lot of text, because there is a lot going on, and boy howdy, it has some writing.
So let's, I guess we'll start there, right? Because it is your standard visual novel, first of all, in terms of all video games, right? You know.
It is definitely more of a, you know, traditional visual novel in the sense, rather than something like, say, you know, like Phoenix Wright, which, you know, is kind of like a visual novel on inspection, but you wouldn't immediately think of it that way, probably.
Or Ghost Trick or Danganronpa.
Yeah.
You're definitely going to be reading more than interacting.
Yeah.
It's also one of those visual novels that are very linear. There aren't really any paths. It's only one story from beginning to end.
There's like bad endings, but it's typically like almost like quote unquote deaths, you know, in the sense that if you do the bad ending, you just probably have to reload a save and redo a little bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Let me upsell the game a little before people start freaking out, though. I found the art style is pretty great, honestly. It's very atypical mm-hmm. for like it's not like an anime style per se. It's a horror. So it's also like I found people are like more restrained in art, like, meaning that, you know, head to body ratios are kind of normal and like eye to face ratios are sort of.
It's got a very strongly gothic vibe to its art style. Like, I was kind of like looking at a lot of this stuff and thinking like how comfortable a lot of this would be in like Castlevania.
I think someone on our podcast described, I can't remember who described
it.
Yeah,
we definitely mentioned like Symphony of the Night, like the first episode or something.
And I'm absolutely not playing Bloodstained in the background while we're talking about this. But anyway, I remember it was almost like everyone looks almost kind of like creepy dolls in a way. You know, they have like a very like staring through you kind of vibe. And there's also multiple art styles for multiple chapters in the game. Like, nothing wild, but certain chapters will all of a sudden have different kinds of character portraits and dialogue boxes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very neat touch, and there's a lot of effort in this game. And who wants to talk about the audio?
So, the audio, like, actually, one of the things when you boot up the game, it tells you that all of the music was, you know, handcrafted for this game. Only a very few things were just like sampled or bought, and those were just like sound effects. The soundtrack is, I don't know how to describe it. It's sort of all over the place in very different genres, and it is very prolific.
Yeah, they go all over the place to kind of match, you know, the kind of period that you're in, because this is a game that takes place over many points in history. So a lot of the musical stylings kind of veer into the kind of territories that you would, you know, associate with that kind of period. Like, there's like,
and the location as well.
Indeed. So it's like the 1600s is kind of like, you know, sort of, you know, Renaissance-esque. And then there's like one that's like in the mid 1800s, and that's got, you know, kind of like, you know, like a jazzy, you know, nightclub gangsta kind of feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think like audio wise, this is really on point, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest sell for the game is definitely the story. And that's why a lot of people recommended us to do it for the book club.
Visual novel book club, VNBC, which you can find on any.
Please find us
post.
On Spotify.
Also on YouTube.
No, but I did find myself listening to the music several times outside of playing the game.
It's on Spotify and on iTunes if you want to listen to it. It's a really great soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. All right,
I thought you meant our podcast again. Like, wait, all right, we're going too far with the plugging. That's too much.
You can also hear part of the soundtrack on our podcast if you want to.
That's a way to do it. Alternatively, you can boot up the game and you can listen to Visual Manga Book Club there or whatever it's called.
Don't even play this. Just listen to our podcast on repeat. Tell your friends. And by our podcast, I mean visual novel. All right, that's enough. But yeah, all right, so I guess...
So should we cover the basic story of the game?
Yeah.
One more thing about the soundtrack. One thing that's nice about it is that a lot of the songs have lyrics, and they're in Portuguese for some reason.
Interesting.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. They're all in Portuguese. There are some comments on the internet from like native Portuguese speakers that it's very like badly pronunciated Portuguese and with many mistakes, much like Japanese English, Japanese Portuguese.
It definitely strikes me as the kind of thing where like it's banking on the kind of phenomenon of like you listen to a song that's not in your language, like you don't know what the hell is going on, but you like the sound of it and you like the feel of it, and it seems like it banks on that kind of notion.
Right.
Yeah, but the lyrics are very nice and they're mostly connected to the game. It's actually kind of spoilery.
Yeah, so if you know Portuguese, you'll get the plot faster than anyone.
You know broken Portuguese.
Yeah.
If your Portuguese isn't that great.
If your Portuguese is a second language, you're at home here.
What was I gonna say? So, spoiler wise, I don't think we're gonna get into it, but we'll talk. I think we'll tell you if there's any coming. But I think like base story. Devious Vacuum's not here. She usually does this part, but
I kind of fill in for her.
You're an unnamed protagonist, and you wake up over your own crucified body, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And your spirit or you somehow arrive at the mansion, the house, if you will. That's all I remember.
Yeah, the manor. And within the manor, you are greeted by the maid, who is going to be your companion of sorts throughout the whole game. And she states that you are the master of this very manor. And she's like, oh, you don't remember anything? Well, that's fine. You will eventually. Why don't we go take a tour of the manor?
Right. And then you sort of, the first few chapters in the game are these like sort of horror vignettes that are basically focused around the lords of the manor, throughout history and the various horrific things that happened to them. And throughout, there's a couple of mainstay characters, mm-hmm. you know, like recurring characters, I guess. One of them being the maid herself, who appears in multiple time periods.
Yep.
And then there's somebody else.
The intent of the maid showing you all this is to hopefully jog your memory, although you're going a couple chapters in, I was very unsure how it was supposed to jog our memory, like how any of these were connected to each other, because they're like centuries apart.
She also kind of helps. She like, I don't think it's meant to break the fourth wall at all, but she sort of helps the player by talking to you, meaning the protagonist, and to say like, oh, don't you remember this, master? Or in this time period, they wouldn't have said such a thing, to kind of like help a more modern player mm-hmm. contextualize themselves with things like that. It works a lot more smoothly than I'm making it out to sound.
Yeah, it's like, at this time, you know, irons were not powered by steam. They were heated through the use of coals.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Things like that. So, but yeah, I mean, I guess very briefly you could talk about too, like the stories are like they center around Mel and Bestia
the other constant in all the stories, the maid herself is kind of like She's in all the time periods, but she doesn't have a big role in the stories.
That's right.
The one character who reappears that does have a big role in every story is White-Haired Girl.
Thank you for reminding me. Yeah, that's right.
And she basically usually appears in the mansion in the various time periods and doesn't really do the horrific stuff, but is kind of
involved.
Yeah,
she's present for all of like the atrocities that go down, and the way that the maid states it is that it is always her; she is never at fault.
Right. It's very unclear who she is or how she is supposed to like fit into all of this, but yeah, she has white hair, red eyes, very pale skin.
Yeah, she has albinism.
Right. She has. I mean, we were banking on her being a vampire, but you know, I won't spoil whether or not that's the case. But yeah, I think that's like a sort of good vague outline.
So
right?
Overarching part of the story is, you know, figuring out your memory, figuring out who this maid is and who the white-haired girl are and why they're appearing in every time period, and this sort of overarching maybe mystery of everyone keeps mentioning a witch that lives in this mansion. Who knows?
What?
We'll have to play the game and find out.
And in a horror? It can't be.
And so, yeah, There's also, you know, the connection of, like, okay, so what do these, you know, the time periods and the various, you know, other masters of the house have to do with this larger overarching narrative that's undoubtedly going on? You know, what are, you know, the holes that these pieces fit into? Because at a glance, they seem, you know, completely unrelated.
The other thing is that the house itself seems to be a different place in the world in each time period.
Mm-hmm.
It starts in England and then it's Italy, I think. In the second chapter?
Spain, right?
Yeah. And then it's in America chapter, in the third chapter.
Oh, right.
No, third chapter. Yeah.
Third chapter's in America. Yeah, you're right here, right.
And this isn't explicitly said in one of the credits to House in Fata Morgana, is you have to figure out a lot of things from context clues.
Yeah, like when the manor shows up in Italy, I think it was you actually who mentioned on VNBC that like there was like a lot of mention of oranges and like this went down at this point in history, so it was like being Florence.
Right. Yeah, there's it's weird, like they don't ever mention the countries explicitly, but one character is very obviously from Japan. And they talk about, like, their nation and how it's isolated at that period of time and their very unique sword.
They have a shogunate, et cetera.
Right. It's like, yeah.
But, yeah, no nation is ever explicitly named. It is, you know, only contextually described.
And they say it rhymes with Huppan. I didn't get that part. I think that was, like, kind of a little much. But, like, you know.
Thank you, unreliable narrator beef.
Yeah, so... It gets into it. I don't know when we want to talk about deeper themes and spoilers and stuff like that, but is there anything else we want to talk about in the game in general before...
I think it'd be good to go over, like, a primer of, like, what the three eras of history that the game shows you are, you know, kind of, like, who and what about before moving on, since, you know, that's kind of the framework the game puts you through.
Okay.
So, the very first door throws you back to the 1600s and is about a noble family, and it particularly focuses on the son, who is the elder of two children, the younger is a sister, and his name is Mel, who is an intelligent but kind of, you know, emotionally inexperienced and awkward kind of sort of dork.
Yeah.
He doesn't really want to, you know, hurt anyone with his decisions, but has, you know, like a difficult time actually, you know, making a good decision because he's like so caught up on, you know, is this the right one? And then, you know, events will happen around him that are out of his control.
Oh, Mel. yeah, there's Mel. There's, let's see.
And the second period focuses around Bestia, who is a beast and is rendered constantly in shadow.
Second chapter is a retelling of Beauty and the Beast, basically.
Yeah, basically. He's basically the beast if the beast was, you know, extremely violent.
He's what's very cool about Bestia is he's rendered as a purple cloud with eyes and teeth, because you're never supposed to know exactly what he looks like.
Mm-hmm. And a very monstrous kind of presentation without breaking the rule of don't show the monster.
Right. This is, and I have to say, this is one of those things that's really hard to get right, I'd imagine. I really think Fata Morgana did that well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Bestia is definitely, I really like the way he's rendered graphically. And there's a lot of... there's things like I think certain things Bestia says, and not just Bestia, but there's a weird thing going on that's really creepy, like a vibe of censorship in a way, because that's the worst thing that can... No, I'm kidding. But like a lot of times like characters, when they're speaking, like some of their words are X'd out and you can't tell like why, you have no idea, like, context of why that is or what that's even about, you know? And it's like very... there's a, like kind of a meta narrative that's happening too throughout the thing, and it's pretty cool. I like it. Just saying.
And that sort of censorship thing feeds into the fourth chapter, a little trick that they do there. But before that is then the third chapter, which is in America, like I said, following Jacopo.
Yes.
And is it Marie or Maria?
Maria.
Maria. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Who is, I guess, a maid of the manor. Or an Abigail, Excuse me, I learned that term from this game.
Yeah, they were called. They're only called Abigails in the 1600s chapter.
Before, actually, you know what? One thing I wanted to bring to you, because Aran, you actually read the Japanese version of this game, right? And you were following along with a Let's Play as well to see like how the translation was. But we actually, it turns out we know the translator, don't we? Through Second Degree, I didn't realize this when we recorded it for VNBC, but apparently, Bobinator's friend, you pinned the pronunciation of their name, but not what the name was. Debar.
Thanks, Debar. Nick Debar.
It is Debar. I'm just trying to find here.
I thought Bob said
Nick Debar. There it is. Nick Debar. He translated it and was seriously proud of it. And I think it went pretty well.
It's a good effort.
Very good translation.
Yeah, it's an excellent translation. I'm always in this position where I read the Japanese version, and then whenever I'm on our podcast, I immediately also read the English one just so I can be in with everyone about the terms and everything. It's always a difficult position because I notice every single thing that's changed or that's not exactly the same, and it's difficult not to get caught on these. But this is a really, compared to other visual novels I've seen, this is a really good translation. They did an excellent job.
So, good stuff.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. you've got the Visual Novel Book Club Award of approval.
Yeah. And this is one of those games, by the way, that has pretty good Japanese prose to begin with. Lots of Japanese prose is really bad in video games. People don't really know how to write. But this guy, his name is Keika Hanada, I think. He wrote a game, and he's a good writer.
All right, Xerxes made me promise we wouldn't go for 2 hours on this one. So let me. I'm going to throw this out there, and I think we're going to be here for a while on ranking, and this might get into stuff we want to spoil and talk about why we think the game is good and stuff. But is there anything else like we need to know before we were going to look at the big list?
I think we should at least get into some spoilers, just because I think we want to talk about how the game handles very difficult themes very well.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention. Mm-hmm. This game definitely deals in heavy themes and navigates them actually quite well.
Extremely.
We're talking about
well.
Stuff like sexual violence and
domestic abuse.
Yeah, domestic abuse, power harassment, some gender issues. And it does them all really, really well, which is really surprising for a Japanese game from 10 years ago.
Yeah, usually like stuff like this, it's always a little awkward to talk about because it's not handled well. You know, I'm just going to say like podcasting about them and stuff. It's like, how are we going to bring up this issue? But Fata Morgana, it treats all these issues respectfully. It treats them, I think, pretty realistically, you know, even considering the time periods that they're in and things like that. And
That's another thing to bring up. When you every time you boot the game, it brings up a message that says, you know, the opinions put forth by the characters in this game are indicative of the times that they lived in, are not reflective of, you know, developers.
That's exactly. It's like, I mean, again, it takes place like some of the story told take place in like the 11th century. So it's like, yeah, hey, not exactly progressive viewpoints, you know? Just
out there. Spoiler alert. Women get treated like trash a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the game goes hard onto these topics too. It doesn't like try and shirk them at all. It expresses them pretty fully. It
shows them for what they are.
Yeah, and to its credit, despite this game being very like full of tragedy and catharsis and everything that just makes your heart feel heavy, it does come out with a lot of hope of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is a very hopeful game.
Yeah, it is definitely very hopeful. I think again, not spoiling anything about the story, but there's kind of a turn. It's a horror for a lot of it, and then there's a point where it's something else. Something I don't know quite how to codify into a genre, but it is about like a central tenet of like being able to overcome.
It's an extended therapy session.
Yes, yes. One person on our podcast even said, I think it was D-Vax, she said like, I feel like this reading this made my life better or something like that. It was like
that's actually when we were. People were suggesting this to us. That's actually a lot of in line with what a lot of people said.
Maybe it was them then, maybe not D-Vec. But
I think it happened on our podcast too. But
yeah.
There were a lot of good comments saying like, hey, I felt really good after playing this game.
It's hard to describe, but I feel like I don't know if I'm overstating this, but it's like with everything going on in the world, it's so weird. Like Fata Morgana gives you this like bit of hope, and like it's not cheap. It's not just like, hey, the world's crappy, but you know what? If you believe in yourself and you just like, you know,
yeah, there's none of that, you know, after school special or shit.
No,
I'll give like a little teaser. One of my favorite lines in the game is just like, it's something like, I don't think I'll ever forgive them, but maybe it's time to let this go.
Yes! And,
sorry.
Yeah, it's so exemplary of what...
It's like this notion that these things are really hard to deal with, but if you can deal with them, you know, and again, it's all handled really well and it's not cheaped out even a little bit. It's like, this too shall pass and you can overcome this or deal with this or however. It's just mwah.
It's funny that you mentioned the 2019 thing, because before we were going into this, I'm like, how am I going to rank this game? And I was like, I have to contextualize it because this is a good game for exactly this era where everything just feels like shit right now.
Yes!
Yeah. Yeah, like, this is definitely one of those things where, like, if you've ever been on the receiving end of, you know, something extremely unpleasant, like, you know, domestic abuse or something, and, you know, it's like, if you find something that you're familiar with, and you, like, you see it, and you just go, oh, shit, this is me. This is me in this situation right now. And, you know, it validates, you know, those feelings, and then just kind of, you know, it gives you kind of like a pathos of like, you know, the perpetrator of this is, you know, getting their punishment, but then like, you know, kind of, you know, it helps you, you know, let go afterwards.
Yeah, I'd have to imagine this game is, part of this game are tough to read if you have any experience with any of these issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah, like,
the game is not flinching away from describing very in a lot of detail the painful stuff. But in the end, it's all very optimistic. And
the Giacomo chapter in particular, like that was the one that hit it for me. I'm like, oh, I know this scene. I've had this scene, you know, many times.
Mm. It's, I think, yeah, it never feels cheap either. And I think one of the really interesting things about the game too is every character is well fully realized. They have multiple stories. You learn a lot about them, past, present, future. Like,
you learn their own perspective. You learn the perspectives of those around them. You learn the perspectives of those after them.
Yeah. Even one or two, like, fairly, like, people you might consider monstrous almost have, like, well-developed things and even, like, sort of justifications for why they are the way they are. And it's, again, just, it's not cheap. I don't know another way to say that. Like, it's, there are easy solutions narratively for stuff like this, and none of them are here. It's all, like, you know, it's,
I guess well it feels like and fully realized narrative.
Yeah, it feels like it almost like, maybe for lack of a better term, it earns the right to talk about some of this really hard stuff with like very thoughtfulness and a lot of thoughtfulness, excuse me, and just well done in general.
Mm-hmm.
500. No, I'm joking. But yeah.
Oren and Turbo, do you have any like other particular points that you'd like to highlight before we move on to ranking?
Maybe just highlight that one of the main characters in the game, and I won't go into any details, is a non-binary character. And I've heard, I'm not non-binary, but I've heard from many people that the way he's portrayed is very real and very, very similar to experience that people actually have in the world. So that's always nice to have in a game.
Yeah, I have heard a lot of praise regarding how the handling of that character in particular. What I want to note about this game is a character named Giselle. They're big honking bazongers.
Oh, they're huge. It's great. No, <I'm kidding. laughs>
I will say, when I was going over Visual Novel Book Club, I came to the episode that was titled, I Want My Mortal Body to Have Big Honking Bazongas. I'm like, ah, now I see why Beef recommended this to me. Hey, pal. I see you're on brand.
It's, what do you call it?
No, it's just, there's a couple, like, scenes where, like, the art is, like, we talked about it again, the art is very, like, realistic, in a sense, and then just, suddenly, just, huge titties come out of nowhere. Like, I mean, what is this?
Yeah, I mean, those happen. Yeah, as an enthusiast, let me tell you, those happen.
I have to out Sobe, Flabby Fritz, these visual novels on the bus, and we have to warn him every time the section we're going to read is at some like problematic.
Oh yeah, I'm on the bus and then like there's always like somebody next to me and I have to like tilt my laptop a certain way. Always, it's like so frustrating, but hot. No, it's what do you call it? Yeah,
but yeah. Just to wrap up Oren's thoughts, going back to the presentation of, you know, gender non-conforming characters being trans myself, you know, I was definitely, you know, nodding my head going, yep, this is correct.
it's good to hear in the sense that, again, like, I have high praise for this game, and again, like, I've always heard secondhand, you know, that it handles these issues well, and, I guess people in the audience who can identify with those themes like felt it was done well. So it's good to have confirmation of that.
All right, so I think it's good to move on to the ranking here. So,
all right,
folks, let's just open up the list and bear in mind that anything over 100 is, you know, broadly considered to be, you know, top class stuff. Like, definitely, you want to give this a play. Territory.
I might have to play bad cop on this because I mean I don't know word exactly how you feel on it. I know that the three of us, like Turbo Aaron and I, are very hype about this game, but I'm sure somebody's got to play the Xerxes role of like, no.
Oh, sure, like I'm fully prepared to do that if necessary, but I'd like to hear what Oren and Turbo would where would you two put it? And I know you've done Steins Gate previously, and that currently sits at 31, so
yeah,
I
feel that's
like
a good reference,
good starting point.
Yeah, that's a good starting point. And I think it's better than Steins Gate.
I do too.
I like it more. I think we can also look at stuff like Undertale, which like deals with similar subjects sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
That's also a good thing to consider.
All right. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, for me, as I was weighing this, like the big thing for it is its story, and it beats out so many things in the story. Its interactivity is not so much the audio is decent. It's really
Science
the
Gate
question
or
of,
this?
Fata Morgana.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Science Gate has a lot of, as a whole, comes together really nice. I think the story might beat out Science Gate. So it's the question of which one I would rather play, I guess, or experience first, because I can't re-experience Fata Morgana's story again for the first time. I'd probably put it below Science Gate, but...
Mm.
So, all right. So about Steins Gate, then, seems to be our territory.
So I'll give you the case for and against above and below Steins Gate, or I guess not all four, but I'll just whatever.
I'll throw out first that I have never played Steins Gate, and I have not gotten around to those episodes of VNBC, so I have pretty much no context for it.
Without spoiling things, right? Like Steins Gate is interesting. It's kind of a growing up story, but it's centered around time travel, which means it's a lot of fun.
Right.
You know?
I have heard that it is a time travel thing.
Yeah, and it's very fun the way they do it, meaning like it's as scientific as you can get with that kind of subject.
Like apparently it's connected to like Occultic Nine and a bunch of other like kind of similarly themed like VNs.
Yeah, it's part of the science adventure series, which are on the same separate games but on the same universe.
I'll put it to you this way, though. I guess the reason I would put it above Steins Gate personally is I feel like if you were to talk about a central theme to these games, to both of them, right? In the case of Fata Morgana, it's like there are deep-seated issues in your life and the relationships that you have, and it can take a lot of courage to bring them up and talk about them, and even some cleverness. But if you are able to tap into that and you can overcome these things that you feel like might be insurmountable in your own life in a way that touches the reader very much, in Steins Gate, it's anybody can time travel. No, all right, that's kind of a joke. I mean, that's not really what Steins Gate is, but I think like Fata Morgana, it does touch upon like deeper, tougher issues by far. You know what I mean? It's much heavier subject matter, and but it handles them well, and it has fun bits. It's not all doom and gloom and sadness, you know.
Hi, Pauline.
Exactly.
Pauline's theme alone.
Pauline's great.
I love Steins Gate. I think Steins Gate is great, but Steins Gate is like a summer action movie. It's not really that deep. It's very fun, but I think Fata Morgana is a much, much more important game.
That's the thing.
Here's what I'm having trouble with here. All these points are very good, and the problem I'm having with here is that Ghost Trick is apparently listed lower than Steins Gate, so now I have to decide.
Sorry. Sometimes you have to watch it with that, like, because you can get caught into that, you know. I mean, like, look up top. I mean, NetHack is number two. Clearly, worth.
Hey, we just recorded that. It's no spoilers.
I know. No, it's on the list that anybody can check, though.
Yeah, but you know, no one ever comes to the list. People listen to the show.
Well, that's because they're avoiding spoilers, I guess. But anyway,
you just spoiled it. Bad beef.
Well. Yeah, I'm sure Xerxes will edit it anyway.
Now there's a joke.
Yes. It's good to have one. Okay. All right. So we're looking at Steins Gate roughly. So, all right. I'll make a proposal out.
So Steins Gate is sitting at 31 for those of you listening along.
I'll make a proposal here and now. What would you think of 31? Like directly above Steins Gate? Because look, right above you got Silent Hill 2. That's hard. Because then you get into things like, okay, wait, now it's visual novel versus the video game, you know? Like, I think this is better than Super Mario World, because I'm not a fan of Super Mario World so much.
I'm not either.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's better than Sonic 3 and Knuckles, which is 24.
Yeah, fuck it, me too, actually.
Yeah, this is the fantastic thing about this show. No one agrees with the list.
Y'all trash some very fun games here right now.
This is the great thing. No one ever agrees with the list, so as far as we are concerned, it's accurate because it plays no favorites.
It's not, all right, look, it's not as good.
You're
as
like,
Marvel
oh,
Madness.
This game, you know, fuck Mario, you can jump and everything, but this game makes you sad.
I didn't realize that we were covering, Space Funeral.
Mario busts through blocks, but this goes through adversity. let's see here.
All right, like my one objection to having it displace Steins Gate directly is because then you have, you know, two very solid VNs back to back, and I'm kind of wary of potentially creating, you know, a VN zone.
Let's do that.
So Turbo is now saying 31. Where are you sitting, Oren?
I'm going to throw all visual novels into that corner.
I'd put it even higher. I mean, I really like this game.
All right.
Probably below Undertale, though, because I think Undertale is a better game.
Okay.
But somewhere around the 26, 27 area for me.
All right, so that's where you're thinking. Beef, how about you?
It's funny, I was going into this for Bad Cop, now I'm like, wait, how the hell high can we get?
How are you going to play Bad Cop?
Yeah, no, forget fuck Bad Cop, I'm in it now. so what were you saying, like 26, 27 area?
That's where Oren's seems to be looking. I'm kind of over here in the realm of, this is definitely an amazingly written story, and, you know, anyone who can, you know, deal with the difficult themes should absolutely check it out. But this end of the list, you know, the upper 50s, and especially, you know, like the 30s, are like, you know, already in the must play zone kind of area. Yeah. So we do have to give it a bit of more of a critical eye in this general area. Is like, you know, like what kind of influence has this game had on, you know,
what?
You on know, society I will or give the medium it a, or anything else?
I will give it a lot of credit as a visual novel. I would say it is an extremely great visual novel, but my biggest problem right with like ranking it among all these games is it has very little interactivity with it.
Yeah, it's not much of a game, which is just also, you know, kind of, you know, the visual novel caveat, but you know.
We're going to be displacing Windjammers even further down off the top 100.
Don't even talk to me about that, because Snatcher is like, I don't want to look at where Snatcher is. I don't want to look.
I don't want to look at where Live a Live is, but you know, here we are.
Live a Live, get the fuck out of here. You're talking to Snatcher, goddammit. No, I'm kidding. But, all right. I mean,
So, So I'm over here, and like I anticipated that I was going to have to, you know, play the Xerxes, and for those who are guests among us, Xerxes is, you know, the guy who actually runs the show and has to play bad cop all the time, which is why I'm saying using him as a verb. So
I mean, but one thing Xerxes touts, I just want to say too, is how a good point of the podcast is to get you playing games that you would not have before.
Absolutely. But another big conceit is, you know, what kind of an influence has this had on, you know, culture or even just games in general?
Right.
It's like, what kind of, you know, what kind of splash has this made?
And not to disagree with science, but those two things are directly, like, contradictory. There is no way to have both. Because if you're so influential, then everyone knows what you are and they played you already. And, if, you know, so get, so just, why didn't Xerxes get
it, like, it's more of a matter of like, beat up, it's done one Pinto. Or the other. Like, does it have one of these as an accolade to claim?
I'm just here to drop Pinto.
You know, here's a compromise. How about 34? Because I think this is much better than Myst. It's a much better game than Myst. Myst is a very influential game, which is one part of what you're talking about. But this is a really good game, a really good story.
And it, I mean, I don't know, Crash Team Racing at number 35. That's tough to beat. Yeah, put it at 34.
This is more directly comparable because of the both stories, and this is a really bad story.
Yeah,
I'm seeing that argument. What are your thoughts, Turbo?
That's a pretty convincing argument, I think.
All right, it sounds like we're going to have it set in on number 34, displacing Myst, which Xerxes jokingly put in the prequel to Riven just to spite people. Does that sound like about where we're on agreement on?
I'm down with that.
All righty then. Number 34, the house in Fata Morgana. Anyone have any closing thoughts that they'd like to add?
Please listen to our podcast instead.
Oh, is there a podcast that we?
Yeah, why don't we plug things while we're out of here? 30 seconds or less. Oren, go.
Visual Novel Book Club. You can listen to it on iTunes or on YouTube.
Turbo, 30 seconds or less. Go.
Visual Novel Book Club. It's out now.
No, I'm streaming.
No, I'm on Twitter at the Turbo C, or sometimes on streaming on Twitch at the Turbo C.
B, if you're an audio show traitor, 30 seconds less or go.
Did you know that if you hate Danganronpa, that's Oren Ronan's fault? Yeah. Fuck Danganronpa.
I can't do the official releases because Super High School Level is my jam. Thank you and good night.
Good night.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know, I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HD Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.